Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, your community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. When President Obama indicated that he supports the rights of same-sex couples to marry, the issue dominated the national discussion for several weeks, with various communities applauding and criticizing the president's position. Now there's a group of pastors vowing to derail President Obama's re-election. Get ready for a ride, folks. We're going to tackle this issue this morning in a big way here on Praise 100.9, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. And a good morning to you. I am certainly excited about this morning having an opportunity to talk about this very, very important issue. The Coalition of African American Pastors, led by a gentleman, and his name is Reverend William Owens, they have launched a campaign to prevent President Obama from being reelected. Here's what Mr. Owens said recently.
The president is in the White House because of the civil rights movement, and I was a leader in that movement. And I didn't march 1 inch, 1 foot, 1 yard for a man to marry a man and a woman to marry a woman. So the president has forgotten the price that was paid, where people died, where they suffered, where they gave their blood to have equal rights in the United States. And for the homosexual community and for the president to bow to the money, as Judas did with Jesus Christ, is a disgrace, and we're ashamed. We will not take it back. We will not back down. That we are going to take action across this country to change the course that this president is carrying us.
Now, I want to unpack this thing. This is going to be rather interesting. Now, this group, the Coalition of African American Pastors, is alleged to consist of over 3,000 pastors. They apparently met recently to devise a strategy that would deny President Obama a second term. And, of course, they are insisting that they would be encouraging the African American community to either vote for Mitt Romney or stay home on election day and not voting. Why? There are a couple of reasons, I think, that's worthy of our consideration. Now, President Obama did say a couple of months ago during an interview that his position on same-sex marriage had evolved, that he supports gays having the right to marry. And when President Obama weighed in on the issue, he said his position on same-sex marriage evolved after years of reflection and contemplation. This thing wasn't decided overnight. This, of course, and there would be a firestorm, and I know that he pondered the idea of there being a firestorm after he would make that announcement. Now, of course, he evoked the notion of civil liberties, his family's interaction and friendships with gays, and of course, his friendship with gays inside and outside of the White House. He has a responsibility as president of the United States. And I think it's important that we all consider, as president of the United States, he's also a man. And a man with a personal journey, someone who is very, who is as reflective as President Obama. You would suspect or even hope that a man would be reflective, would ponder deeply about this issue. So we ought to give him credit for at least considering and pondering this thing with a level of sincerity. But of course, as you know, there are individuals who obviously have criticized him. And what is so outrageous to me is how narrow-minded and opportunistic these alleged pastors are. I just have to be honest. That is my opinion. And by the way, Reverend William Owens claims that he was involved in the civil rights struggle in Nashville. It's now being roundly debunked by organizers and participants of many of the protests and demonstrations in Nashville, which speaks volumes about his credibility and integrity. But I digress. First of all, we live under a democracy. The United States of America is not a theocracy. I think some people out there are confused by that. I know there's an issue of whether or not this is a Christian nation. The fact of the matter is, this is a democracy, not a democracy. Our a theocracy, our government and the laws that govern this land falls under the purview of the Constitution, not the Bible or any other religious document for that matter. I didn't elect President Obama to be, as I heard one gentleman say, pastor of this country. He's the president. He has a constitutional obligation to uphold the civil liberties of every American, the human rights of every American, the individual rights of every American. And of course, that includes folks from the gay community. They are American. This is not a theocracy. It is a democracy. There are no religious dictums. No doctrines, no dogma that he's obligated to follow as president of the United States. Now, he is a Christian, but there is a clear demarcation with regard to his obligations here. He is a Christian personally, but he is the president of the United States, and he was elected as such. And what galls me is this selective amnesia employed by not only these pastors, but many of the people in the African-American community that embrace the most cynical, the most abrasive position on this issue. And I'm going to be honest. There was a point several years ago where I embraced that abrasiveness. But thank God for growth. So the question for me, the question for those who want to engage in these kinds of behaviors, preventing the president from being reelected because of their religious position? Have you forgotten your history? Have you forgotten that there was a target once plastered on your back? Have you forgotten the institutional and governmental prejudice that stymied your efforts of freedom, liberty, and justice? That's the question. Have you forgotten that you were the targets of discrimination, racism, and bigotry? You listen to this gentleman, and it seems to me that he's forgotten what it means to be a victim of an institutionalized system that would deny an individual the absolute right of full humanity. He seems to have forgotten that. How easy we forget that the same language couched in biblical excuses were used to undermine our ability to exercise our full humanity. This is a disgrace, what I hear and see from these individuals. Now, of course, it's their right to oppose President Obama's position on same-sex marriage. We all have that right. Absolutely. No question about it. It's even your right to not vote for President Obama for a broad range of things that that he's responsible for. But when you launch a campaign to encourage people to not vote based on your opposition to the civil liberties of gays and your erroneous interpretation of scripture, you're undermining the fundamental principles of our struggle for freedom. And that principle is for all of mankind, having the right to enjoy their full humanity. And I think it's a shame. You are not holding up the principles of the Bible. And worse, you are spitting upon the notion of principles of freedom and justice. Now, as I was doing show prep for this morning, it dawned on me that there is a sense of amnesia going on. And that's all that occupied my mind as I was preparing for this show. Amnesia. How easy we forget that there were targets on our back and on the backs of other targeted groups. It's fascinating to me. Let's deal with the biblical hypocrisy, which for me is at the root of this campaign. It is a fallacy to say that the biblical standard of marriage is only between one man and one woman. Now, I talked about this in actually last week. It's a fallacy. And for me, it's promulgated by individuals who are either completely ignorant of that which is in the Bible, or they are intentionally misleading people. Because the reality is, there is a myriad of scripture that contradicts the notion that the biblical standard of marriage is only between one man and one woman. All you need to do is crack open the Bible, and you can see, you will absolutely see that there is a contradictory position at work here. Take, for example, Esau in the book of Genesis. Esau has had three wives. Jacob in Genesis had four wives. In the book of 2 Chronicles, Abijah had 14 wives. One man, one woman. Lamech, according to Genesis 4:19, had two wives. Some bigamy going on here. According to the book of Judges, Gideon had many wives. And let's not forget Abraham's marriage to his half-sister, Sarah. And of course, their sexual arrangement with Hagar, because she couldn't bear her own children. Let's not forget those marriages. So to suggest that the biblical standard of traditional marriage is between one man and one woman is an absolute fallacy. And of course, I admit there are a bevy of marriages in the Bible where it is between one man and one woman. But you cannot escape this reality. Jacob having four wives. That's not one man, one woman. That's a polygamous relationship sanctioned and championed by the writers of scripture. And of course, it was the culture of the time. And so this false assertion is further contradicted by the other sanctioned forms of marriage that today we would think would be absolutely unwelcomed in a civilized society. Do you know that in the book of Deuteronomy, if for instance, if a woman was raped, she would be required to marry her attacker? Of course, there was some arrangement worked out with the woman's father, but the reality is she was required to marry her rapist, her attacker. And as I mentioned last week, a levirate marriage, which would require a widow who did not have a son to be taken in by her brother-in-law and impregnated so that a resulting son would be an heir to her late husband. What about a woman who became prisoners of war being forced to marry or become the concubine of her captor, as indicated in the book of Deuteronomy? These are the Bible-based marriages that you won't hear talked about during this discussion. You won't hear Reverend Owens mentioning that in any particular news conference. Why? Because there is an abounding hypocrisy that we see coming from individuals like these. Because people are absolutely willing to project their own selective morality and their own convoluted interpretations of scripture on other people. Astounding hypocrisy. You can't, on the one hand, say that you are for traditional marriage as indicated in the Bible, and at the same time ignore the passages in the Bible that contradict your position. Brokers of fact are not permitted the luxury of obscuring facts and information. And what we're seeing and what we're hearing from Reverend Owens and others is spurious hypocrisy. Now, I want you all, as you are listening and mulling over this issue, I want you to pay close attention to the language that is being used. Because for me, what is absolutely incredible is these pastors and many people that embrace this shameful hypocrisy is the notion that we are inviting God's judgment for allowing gays to exercise their civil rights and enjoy their full humanity. First of all, there are millions of children around the world, especially on the African continent, and other parts of the world, starving to death right now. Have you seen their bloated bellies? Have you seen their disease-ridden bodies? Have you seen how they are grappling with unimaginable pain? All because of the feckless leadership of their governments. All because they live under brutal dictatorships and oppressions. Are you attuned to the abject poverty in our own nation? Criminals running rampant in our streets. Corporations, as I said before, exploiting the poor and the vulnerable in all societies. Governments right now, today, teetering on wars in an effort to bludgeon other nations with power. And God is worrying about two people of the same sex showing love for each other and demonstrating a commitment that Christians fail to keep? That's incredible to me. It's not only incredible, it's ridiculous, given how we've seen Christians extol the virtues of marriage in this country. I read a study a while ago, last week, that addressed the divorce rate among Christians. And it was initiated by the Barna Group. The Barna Group found in its latest study that born-again Christians who are not evangelical were indistinguishable from the national average of on the matter of divorce, with 33% having married and divorced at least once. Among all born-again Christians, which includes evangelicals, the divorce figure is 32%, which is statistically identical to the 33% figure among non-born-again adults, the research group noted. While a higher proportion of born-again Christians marry, 84% compared to the national 78%, recent trends indicate that Americans are growing more comfortable with divorce, including Christians. So if God is going to direct his judgment on a group that is destroying an institution, these folks say that he established, it ought to be directed at people who seem to be sullying the institution, who seem to be dishonoring their own vows before God for whatever reason. So if these pastors want to uphold the virtue of marriage, they need to start in their own house. Pastors having multiple affairs, deacons creeping out at night on their wives, church leaders beating their spouses, bishops and priests molesting young boys, prosperity pimps fleecing their flock. And as I said last week, the vanity and materialism has so pervaded, so poisoned today's church that people on the streets cannot make a distinction between the church and the world. These pastors want to prevent President Obama from regaining the White House? Clean up your own house. Because if you're going to talk Bible, you're going to go Bible. You can't pick and choose. You don't have that luxury. Otherwise, you're going to be considered a hypocrite. Because if the standard is because it's in the Bible, well, we should be stoning adulterers. We should be stoning disobedient children. We should be stoning other folks who engage in all kinds of crazy behavior. You shouldn't even be around a woman when she's menstruating. Men shouldn't be shaving their heads. You shouldn't be eating pork or shellfish because it's in the Bible. You should be stoning to death teenage girls who lost their virginity. Gather them all out in the street or in front of their homes and let all the men of the city stone them. How about keeping a woman silent in the church and preventing them from preaching and teaching? That's in the Bible. How about making sure we impose biblical values on all women of the church by requiring them to dress modestly, covering up those boobs, pulling down those short skirts to your ankles? Leave the expensive jewelry home. It's in the Bible. I am not interested in anybody's feckless hermeneutics or any convoluted exegesis to explain away why certain behaviors are permitted and are not permitted. You won't hear that from Reverend Owens and others. So here, when I deal with this issue, my interest is tearing down the walls of hypocrisy. Last week I talked about host nailing and blood libel, where Jews were the targets of the most vicious and deadly attacks by so-called Christians using the Bible, their own convoluted doctrine, and their deeply profound prejudice against Jews. We need to be reminded of what it means to have a target on our backs. to be the target of someone else's bigotry and religious zealotry. We ought not forget how easy it is to stir the ire of people who are deeply tethered to their own prejudices, who will use the Bible as a weapon to bludgeon other people into submission. That is what is going on here. Don't forget the argument over slavery was about a challenge to the moral sensibility of our nation. Southern proponents of slavery used passages of scripture to justify that devilish institution, to promote and maintain our ancestors in bondage. And then, of course, you had Northern opponents of slavery who used the same scriptures as a beacon to end the bondage of our ancestors. So the point is, the Bible can be used to justify just about anything or any behavior. So our God should not be anyone's insidious or agenda-driven interpretation of scripture. Rather, we should be embracing civil liberties and the constitutional rights of every human being to exercise their full enjoyment of life and humanity. Now I want to end the show by saying this. The biblical writers didn't have the scientific method to make judgments or determinations about the intrinsic or biological nature of mankind. They didn't have that. Their thinking was limited to the social parameters and the religious dynamics of their day. And as I said last week, when the book of Joshua suggests that the sun stood still during Joshua's battle with the Amorites, we know today that the sun is and has always been in a fixed location. That if the event actually occurred, it would mean that the earth stood still. That's not in scripture. And we know that the sun doesn't actually rise. It's the rotation of the earth that gives the perception of the sun's rise. It's not in the Bible. When Galileo and Copernicus was reviled by the church because of their insistence that the earth was not the center of the universe, but that we are merely a speck in the expanse of the universe, vindication came as a result of our scientific observations, not some feckless interpretation of scripture written by men who could see no further than their own social and religious framework. We know today that the world is not 6,000 years old, that our earth has been in existence for nearly 5 billion years, that our universe is nearly 14 billion years old. So if the brain's amygdala region may indicate a causal connection for homosexuality, that is worth further exploration, not some feckless biblical indictment. If there is some other biological or genetic explanation for this lifestyle, we've taken this argument out of the hands of biblical writers and bigots and placed it in the lap of humanity. We should not be in the business of erecting walls and barriers to prevent people from exercising their right to happiness. We tore down oppressive barriers called slavery. The walls of segregation crumbled under the weight of justice. Laws preventing interracial marriage were shredded. And now we're at the point in human history where we must grapple with a fundamental question. Do we have a right to erect walls to prevent another targeted group of people from exercising their full humanity, utilizing the very book that undergirded the bondage of our ancestors and the institutionalized discrimination and racism that mired this country in shame for many, many years? That's the question we must ask ourselves. So the effort by the Coalition of African American Pastors to deny the re-election of President Obama because of his constitutional obligation to uphold the notion of civil liberties and human dignity for all human beings is both cynical and disingenuous, especially given the hypocrisy that emanates from today's church, standing on the pulpit, preaching the word, as you have some woman stashed somewhere. Children that nobody knows about because of your illicit behavior with other women, evading taxes, all kinds of behavior, and you're going to pass judgment on people who are simply trying to live, who are simply trying to enjoy their lives? Communities crumbling, dilapidated buildings all over the place, people are being shot, and now you find a voice? Absolute hypocrisy. To launch efforts to encourage people not to vote is shameful. And if their efforts are to encourage people to vote for Mitt Romney on this singular issue, it would be a clear demonstration of how deeply out of touch these pastors are with respect to all of the issues that are plaguing our community. What a shame. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9. We'll be back in a moment. Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. As we mull over the contentious arguments that plagues the debate over same-sex marriage, I want you to be wary of the rancor and vitriol that often accompany this discussion. It's okay to disagree with same-sex marriage and, of course, the gay lifestyle. It's your right. What I object to is the abounding hypocrisy reflected in the statements and actions by groups like the Coalition of African American Pastors. Let's not forget from whence we've come. For any of us to erect walls and barriers to prevent any group of people from enjoying their full humanity is wrong. And to encourage our community not to vote based on your religious dictums and your interpretations of Scripture is equally offensive. Remember, the writers of Scripture were sorting out the arguments of their day and operating within the parameters of their religious and social environment. The Bible is meant to be a guide, not an anvil to bludgeon people. One way to accurately measure if you are truly emulating Jesus is if you're demonstrating an abounding love for all of humanity. If your approach to biblical and spiritual matters is Pharisaic and oppressive, you might consider re-examining the Jesus of Scripture and the Jesus portrayed by right-wing so-called evangelical Christians. And I do put Christians in quotations. There's a huge gulf between the Jesus of Scripture and the Jesus of today's Christian fundamentalists. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollandsblogspot.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.